The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 1st, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what has turned out to be a gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area. Feels like this crazy thing called fall in Auburn and Opelika. And as I mentioned, first day of October. Isn't that wild? I don't know where the summer went. School has started and well into the year. High school football season over halfway done, and college football well underway as well. Lots to get to on this Wednesday edition of the show. Christian, how are you, sir? Happy October to you.
Yeah, happy October. Yeah, it does feel a little bit like fall. It's like 83 degrees, but it actually doesn't feel overly miserable. I know you were talking about what this Friday could possibly look like. You went ahead and
let's check again on the unnamed weather app.
Yeah, broke the cardinal sin of looking what the weather looks like on a...
Oh, yeah. It's still holding strong.
What are we looking at here?
Friday says partly cloudy, high near 80, lows in the 60s.
That's high school football.
High school football,
right there, baby.
When the sun drops down, it'll be just chilly enough to where when we're working in the booth, we won't, you know, be sweating and dying.
Yes, but enough to where, if you stand still, you're a little bit chilly, but us that stand the entire time and are losing our minds with every play, it'll feel just fine. Well, we have another fantastic show lined up for everybody today. I did some calculations and did some math that's not going to make a lot of people happy, but it responds to a question that we talked about earlier in the week of what other SEC teams would look like in Kyle Field given Auburn's circumstances. We also have some more Hugh Freetz quotes today that I'm sure everybody is going to love and completely agree with. And after today's show, you'll leave with a peace of mind. You'll feel completely back to normal on how it'll feel like the Saturday after Baylor, I would tend to believe. That's what it will feel like. Before we get with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 recapping the Georgia-Alabama game, how Georgia can respond when they have Kentucky this weekend. Before we dive into a little bit more of that coaching football news around the world, or the coaching news around the world of college football, rather, before a very, very fun hour number two.
Yep, so phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes or so of today's show for now, 334-321-1390. If you want to be a part of today's action, we'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Believe I got a text earlier today. I did. And there's a lot going on in this text, so we'll get to it kind of as we go. There's some stuff that we're going to get to a little bit later. But Christian, you had proposed a question earlier in the week. I think it was on Monday. And it was based off of what Auburn did or didn't do in College Station, Texas, offensively. The fact that the game was as close as it was, Auburn had four separate chances to go down and win the football game offensively and simply couldn't do it. And your best drive of the day was 1 yard after a near pick six or a near fumble recovery touchdown from Xavier Atkins, who honestly should have had himself 6 points on his resume. The question you proposed was how many teams in the SEC could have gone to Kyle Field last week, could have gone to College Station, could have gone to take on the ninth-ranked team in the country, Texas A&M, who, by the way, only scored 16 points in the game. How many SEC teams, if you told them, hey, go to College Station and you score 17 points, I don't care how you do it, offensively, defensively, special teams, if you're, the coach's son wants to do it, I don't care. How many SEC teams would have scored 17 points last Saturday against Texas A&M and won the football game? We're not talking defensively, if you could have held A&M to 16 or whatever, given Auburn's defensive performance.
Correct.
How many teams in the SEC would have scored 17 points and won the football game?
And there's even a sub-asterisk to that because of the Xavier Atkins almost pick six, to where the sub-note of your offense only has to score 10. That's the subcategory, essentially, of that.
Yeah, but just the team, again.
Team in general needs to put up 17 points.
Offensively drives, defensive touchdowns, kick return touchdowns, field goals, whatever, safeties, I don't care. The team has to score just 17 points on the road in conference on a top 10 opponent. We want people to answer this question. You listening right now. How many teams currently in the SEC could have gone on the road and scored 17 points and won that football game last
week? And we'll say of the 14 that are not in this conversation. Not with A&M, not with Auburn.
I got you.
But if you want to throw it, keep A&M. So of the other 15 teams.
You know what my answer is?
My answer is 14.
My answer is 15. My answer is 15.
I can confidently say 14. Florida is my question mark.
Kentucky would be my question mark, but I think they could get it done. I think they could luck their way into 17 points.
Into two drives that score points?
That's all it takes. That's all it would take. I think every team in the SEC, given Auburn's defensive performance last week, could have gone on the road and scored just 17 points and won that football game. Which should tell you everything you need to know about where Auburn is offensively, where the mindset is, where the game planning is, where the adjusting is, where the confidence is. Folks, we're talking about teams like Kentucky and Vanderbilt and Arkansas who just fired their head coach, who I think could have won that game last Saturday.
Easily.
They easily would have won that game last Saturday with Auburn's defensive performance. And that's what I'm going to keep going back to because they deserve so much credit here and they're simply not getting it because of the losses on the resume.
Auburn's defense is almost like what you're seeing in the modern day MLB with like Cy Young winners and how the win-loss record doesn't truly play a factor into it because Paul Skenes could easily win it this year. And Skenes, let's look up Paul Skenes' record this past year. I don't remember exactly what it was. He went 10-10 this year with a 1.97 ERA.
That's stupid.
That is stupid. He had 216 strikeouts and was fourth in the league in whip, averaging less than a walk or a hit per inning. But went 10-10 because the Pirates' offense couldn't do anything to help him out. But he's going to win the Cy Young. That's what Auburn's defense is, incomparable, if you're looking at the way that I look at things in the MLB, of, man, it's not fair to say that the defense is 3-2. It just isn't.
No, it's not. And I hope there's a way. I think you and I were talking about this off the air the other day. I hope there's a way for DJ Durkin and his staff and his guys, his players, to look at this and feel okay. Right? They haven't been perfect. That's safe to say. They've given up some plays. They've given up a couple of opportunities. But here we are again. The same conversation we had a year ago is still true with the two losses that Auburn has this year. Remember what the stat was? All of Auburn's losses, except one last year, the defense gave up more than 28 points. They gave up 31 to Georgia, something like that.
And then gave up 40 to A&M, but the offense found a way to win that game.
Yeah. In your losses last year, you gave up more than 28 points one time. In your losses this year, you've given up 24 and 16. You've yet to give up more than 24 points, even to Baylor at their place, one of the most explosive offenses in P4. You gave up 24 points. I don't want there to be division in the locker room. I don't want there to be division in this team and in that building over there at the Waltos Performance Center. But behind closed doors, if I'm DJ Durkin and I sit my defensive guys down and say, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You are performing at a high level. This is one of the better defenses we've seen at Auburn in quite some time. This is a championship level defense.
Yeah. You're performing at a college football playoff-esque worthy defense.
Yes. You're absolutely a top 12 unit in the country, top 15 minimum.
To where if the offense was 10th in the SEC.
Yeah, in the SEC. Not in the country. The SEC.
If you were 10th, if you were top half of what we've seen the past 2 weeks, you're 5-0 on the verge of starting to have legitimate conversations. And now you're at the point of 3-2, hoping that Jordan Hare magic can work again in 2 weeks.
It's funny we're having this conversation. Somebody just texted us in our on-the-line text box again. 334-784-1067. Get your thoughts in there, or you can give us a call at 334-321-1390. We're going to have a perfect example of this weekend, Christian. Do you remember who goes to College Station this weekend?
Yeah, Mississippi State for A&M's freaking blackouts. I know I showed you the video of it. If Auburn goes into College Station and beats Texas A&M, they're not doing what they're doing this weekend. But because now they're a freaking top 8-9 team, whatever the AP poll has them, they are blacking out. They're sixth. Okay. They are blacking out College Station. Usually the end zones are maroon. The TAMU at midfield is maroon, and the sidelines are maroon. Go watch the video that they posted on social media. The end zones are black, the sidelines are black, and the midfield logo is black for a 6:30 kickoff where I guarantee they bring out their all-black uniforms. Mississippi State, because you're undefeated.
But yet, they should be feeling pretty good. They should. They should feel pretty good.
And yeah, but again, going back to that point, look at what Blake Shapen is going to be able to do.
Right. That's what the texture says is, how will it look when Mississippi State goes into College Station and puts 21 to 24 points on the board and could win the game? Now, I don't know
if I trust their defense to only give up 21
right.
points.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know what their defense will be able to do for four quarters. They did shut down Arizona State and Sam Levitt and held them to 20 points.
Yeah.
Tennessee, unfortunately, gave up 41, but had every chance to win that football game, and they just kind of crumbled down the stretch. And I think coaching and Joey Aguilar went and won that game for you after Mississippi State made a couple of mistakes and couldn't capitalize on what they needed to do. But, yeah, what happens if Mississippi State goes on the road this weekend to Texas A&M in the middle of this conversation we're having and puts up 24 points? Holds A&M to 28-31.
In an environment that will be more difficult.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Because it will be a night game.
It's a great point.
Again, I did some math.
And the team you were worried about, Florida goes to Texas A&M next game.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. Yeah. You're going to be able to see it once again. But I did some math on all the SEC teams and what they've done against P4 teams and then notable G5 teams, those being Tulane, Memphis, teams like that. Ole Miss is averaging 35 points a game. Missouri, 35.5. Tennessee, 42.5. Arkansas, 26. Vanderbilt, 37.5. A&M, 28.5. Alabama, 26. Georgia, 33. Texas, 7, because they've only played one, which is wild to think about. In Columbus against Ohio State.
The fact that it's October 1st and that's played, the stat.
And Texas still has yet to beat a P4 team. Yeah, which is wild to think about. Mississippi State is averaging 29, Oklahoma 24, LSU 16.5 against three ranked defenses, essentially. Kentucky 18, South Carolina 22, and Florida 11. And then Auburn's in there at 21.7. That's a big outlier against Baylor.
Yeah, it is. And you are in the same conversation with South Carolina with a backup quarterback or an injured starting quarterback and an offensive line that may be the worst in the SEC. You're in the same conversation with Kentucky, woohoo, and you're in the same conversation with Florida, who is on the verge of firing their head coach. That's not the company you want to be a part of here. That's the point of this conversation. That's the point of this question that we have posed, which is, for those of you just now tuning in, how many SEC teams could have gone to Kyle Field last week against Texas A&M, and given Auburn's defensive performance, how many of those SEC teams could have scored 17 points as a team, no matter how you do it? Offensively, defensively, special teams, how many SEC teams could have scored 17 points last week against that Texas A&M defense and won the football game? Christian says 14. I say 15. I think every team in the SEC could have won that game last week. And yet Auburn found a way to lose. That's what's so frustrating. Auburn didn't not win. They found ways to lose, as they always do. As they always do.
You know how different the conversations would be over the last 2 weeks of, yeah, we just ran into two buzzsaws that are college football playoff bound, doing everything right, and honestly just had a better game plan and went out and played a better football game. You know how different those conversations would be? Because, again, we talked about this in the preseason. 3-2 is okay when everything is said and done. We said 4-1 is very manageable. We didn't realize how manageable 5-0 truly was. But 3-2 was okay, but it really needed to amp up with the bye week. You now work your way into the bye week with less confidence than you did as walking into the season, because of how the last 2 weekends have gone.
I think it would give validity to those who are in the very small camp of, well, Auburn lost on the road to two really good teams by just one score. I think we should give them some slack. I think it would give validity to that, because I don't agree with that statement. I think that's a weak mentality. I think that's a loser's mentality, if I'm being quite honest with you. If those two teams, Oklahoma and Texas A&M, because they beat Auburn, because they got the win on their resume, they're now favorites to make the college football playoff. Go look at Texas A&M's schedule. And they have every opportunity to be the third representative out of this conference. Oklahoma's maybe not as much because of the back end of their schedule. But, folks, Texas A&M, if they can find any sort of defense, because they did not play good defensively against Auburn. They didn't. They had a good game plan because they knew Hugh Freeze was stubborn and wouldn't do what he needed to do. Texas A&M plays Mississippi State, Florida, and at Arkansas their next three games. They'll win all of those. They do have to go to LSU, which is tough, but not undoable. Unwinnable, right? It's not impossible. You go to Missouri, which, again, good team, not great, in my opinion, and A&M has every chance to win what would probably be a shootout in Como. Host South Carolina, who is not good. Host Samford in your non-con, and a chance to go into Austin and take on the Texas Longhorns for what could very much be a spot in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. Because you beat Auburn, Texas A&M is now on their way to make a college football playoff if they take care of business. Oklahoma's the same way. But I'm tying this into your statement, Christian. Neither one of those teams I would consider elite, buzzsaws, hot. I wouldn't say that about those two teams. And I'm taking my blinders off here. I promise I am. And I ask everybody to do the same. That's the issue. Is Auburn could have been on that path. Auburn could be in that conversation. But you're not. You set those two teams up for success the rest of the way. And Auburn is now reeling once again and just trying to catch their breath.
How long have Auburn fans, us included in this conversation, given too much credit to other teams on a loss rather than simply being pissed off about Auburn losing the football game?
It's been pretty rare, man. It's been rare for us to sit here on a Monday or any time.
I'm saying it's
week.
Not rare. I think we go up there and over the past 10 years been, man, you know, that team just, you know, if the circumstances were hard, and Auburn tried, but the other team was just good. I think that's a conversation that, again, brings up that losing mentality of, rather than being upset that your team lost, finding ways to still bring in confidence while giving other teams the reality of, or not giving them the reality of what you're talking about, of these two teams are not ones that are world beaters or buzzsaws. Auburn goes in there and loses both of those games. loses.
You lost those games. I'll give you that Oklahoma beat you, sure. You lost. You just lost it against Texas A&M. You lost. You just simply had no life. You had nothing. You had nothing to show for yourself. And that is so demoralizing. And I hate to be that way on this show, but it's like, man, there is no light at the moment. There's a lot to fix and not a lot of time to do it. And I go back to something we also mentioned in the preseason before we take our first break. Remember when we talked about what if it was reversed, the roles were reversed for this Auburn team in terms of the offense was elite, but the defense sucked, right? What if that were the case where the defense gave up 35 points a game, 500 yards, like you see in the Big 12, like a Baylor team type of thing,
sure,
but the offense could put up 40 at any given time? Wouldn't that be such a relief? It would have its own frustrations, and we've had Auburn teams that way in the past.
Even if the record is the exact same.
But knowing that you at least have a chance.
Knowing that there's at least excitement on drives offensively.
We talk about that in basketball all the time, right? Teams that can't shoot the three ball, those teams are miserable to watch and cover and talk about, because when you get down by 10 points, you're done. It's over. You know in the back of your mind that team can't come back on the hardwood. That's how we feel about this Auburn team offensively. I would, at this point, to sacrifice the defensive performance to give some of that good juju to the offense, I absolutely would. I absolutely would do it. And that probably means DJ Durkin's not the head man there, and that is what it is. But if I had a special godly type power to say, let me take half of the good stuff from the defense and put it over here on the other side of the team, I would do it in a heartbeat.
To where you would hopefully get to the point offensively, if you are winning 35-31 or 38-35 in every single game, you would hope that there would be some sort of decency to use your running backs as your defense, of just picking up first downs and moving the chains. But thankfully, we're at the point now to where, with a bye week, we have the point to reevaluate ourselves. And some more quotes have been released by the head man himself, and I'm sure that that's not going to bring up any sort of hard or negative feelings whatsoever.
No, don't worry. We'll talk about those quotes, and everything's going to be fine, folks. Everything's going to be just fine. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up as we're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will join us on the phone lines, as he does every single Wednesday. We'll talk about the Georgia Bulldogs and how in one of their biggest home games in recent memory, they could not get it done as the Alabama Crimson Tide walk into Sanford Stadium and pull off the upset 24-21. We'll talk about what happened there, the bounce back for Georgia, and what they're doing to prepare for the Kentucky Wildcats this Saturday before they come to Auburn and take on the Tigers. But before we get to that, Hugh Freeze had his weekly visit on the SEC teleconference. He did not meet with local media this week on the bye, as they typically don't, but their required SEC teleconference, basically just a big phone call with any SEC media members that want to be a part of it. And stop me if you've heard this one before. Hugh Freeze had some interesting quotes today, had some fascinating things that haven't been said from him ever before.
And no way that anybody like overreacts from it.
No,
right?
No. I'll just read these off here. We got about 2 minutes. I'll just start reading. Speaking on the Oklahoma and Texas A&M losses, Hugh Freeze says, quote, "We had a chance to win both if we coached a little better and made a few more plays," end quote. Hugh Freeze, and these are some quotes that Nathan King put out from Auburn 247. Hugh Freeze on Auburn's offensive line. "That's the question that's on our mind constantly in this building." Hugh Freeze on the running game says, "We've got to commit to running the football again. even if it's a 2 yard or 3 yard gain. Let me read that one again. Hugh Freeze says, quote, we've got to commit to running the football again, even if it's a 2 yard or 3 yard gain. Yikes. Yikes.
But we can't do that because we don't get explosive plays through the passing game.
But don't worry. Auburn plans on looking at everything and tightening up the playbook, sharpening up the playbook, cutting down on the playbook, is what Hugh Freeze said today. Because it's been too all over the place, apparently. It's been too broad. So they're going to tighten it up.
Didn't we hear that last year?
Sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it?
Man, the playbook is just too complicated. We can't execute. The guys just seem confused. So we're going to go back to hut, hut, handoff, run up the middle. Hut, oh, we got you. We snapped it on the first hut this time. The guys out wide, you keep doing what you're doing. You run 5 yards and stop, or you run straight. You keep doing what you're doing, but we might take away one route at a time every single, play.
That's just what I was going to say. It's like, of the four plays you've been running, which one are you going to cut out to diminish the playbook? Which one? Are you going to cut out the design quarterback draw that everybody knows is coming, the go balls for the receivers?
Or the hitches.
Or the hitch routes.
Yeah.
Which one of those three would you like to cut down on to make the playbook easier?
Yes. I did really quick math over the break.
Oh,
since 2015, and there's not a true calculation to this, it was just me using my brain and looking at our record. Auburn has lost 17 games since 2015, where if the offense does anything, they win.
Anything as in?
Like, if you watch the game, just do anything. 10 of those since 2021.
Yeah, that's exciting. You know what team doesn't have problems scoring the football for the most part? The Georgia Bulldogs. We'll talk with Jordan Hill about them coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and we appreciate you being with us here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7. And we bring in our Wednesday 2:30 guest, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. And you and I were joking on the phone before coming on, Jordan. While the mood is not good here in Auburn because of the Tigers, if there's anything that can make Auburn fans a little happy today, it's the fact that Georgia lost last weekend.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I'm sure that we'll get into what happened last week. I'm sure Auburn fans were hoping if there was a way both teams in Athens could have lost last week, that would have been great. But no, good to catch up with you guys and try to make sense of what happened with Georgia last week, and look forward to this week as well.
Well, Jordan, I know you were hoping that both teams lost as well, because according to social media, I mean, you're the biggest Auburn fan there ever is, and I saw Clemente post the picture of what your bedroom looked like, and so apologies for you for having to cover that game.
Yeah, there's usually there's always something to talk about, I can assure you of that. And yeah, I think the folks around Athens are now pronouncing it Jordan instead of Jordan. So
Jordan
I've
Hill.
Been called worse. I've been called worse, so we'll roll with it.
The internet, it's an undefeated place when teams lose for their fan bases. And so a fan base that, yes, has been riled up the past couple of days are the Georgia fans, because of what happened last Saturday in Sanford Stadium, where Kalen DeBoer in the Alabama Crimson Tide, I think doubted most people, Christian, proved most people wrong, myself included, about what they did against the Georgia Bulldogs last Saturday. 24-21, Alabama beats Georgia at night in Sanford Stadium. Man, break it down on what you saw there on Saturday.
I think the biggest takeaway is that Ty Simpson lived up to the moment. I mean, he was fantastic for Alabama, and Georgia had no answer. You know, Alabama converted their first 8 third downs. I want to shout out Cole Kublik, had the stat after the fact. Alabama converted 13 third downs in the win. That is the most that Georgia has allowed in at least the last 30 seasons, and may even go further back than that. But, I mean, that was a huge part of the problem. They just could not keep Alabama off the field, especially in the first half. Alabama dominated time of possession, and Georgia struggled to take advantage. Had their opportunities in the second half, really settled in defensively, got some stops, gave the offense opportunities, and just a handful of plays, guys. You know, this football season, I've done a series every Sunday that is five plays that change the game. And the reason I came up with a series is, you know, it's a pretty common refrain from coaches that, you know, four or five plays here or there can turn a ball game, even in games that aren't decided by a possession or 3 points like the game last week. But Georgia had several moments in this game that when you lose by three, they loom super large. You know, Nate Frazier fumbles in the second quarter on the Alabama 11, and credit to the defense, they get a stop, or at least they force a field goal, keep them out of the end zone. But when you wind up losing a game by three, that really matters. A true freshman, Talon Taylor, dropped what could have been a go-ahead touchdown in the second half. Georgia doesn't get any points on that drive. The fourth and one that Georgia was stopped short on with Cash Jones, when they could have tied the game there, there were just moments throughout that game that Georgia had the opportunity to at least even itself with Alabama and potentially take a lead. They did not take advantage. And when you're playing a team as talented as Alabama is, when you don't take advantage, you wind up on the wrong end of the scoreboard by the end of the night.
Jordan, what was the vibe in the stadium or in the press box when you saw Kirby bring the offense back onto the field again in a three-point game, rather than taking the points, trying to do what you can to extend it, trying to go for the game or trying to go for the touchdown and try and take the lead?
Well, the situation, they actually hurried up, so the offense never left the field. It was third and I think three, and Gunnar Stockton had taken a short run on third down. They keep the offense out there, and Gunner's trying to get them to go with tempo. And the watching it live, you know, the way it was playing out, I thought that Gunner saw something, you know, that, you know, he thought that he liked, and he may have, because Kirby Smart said after the game, and I think on Monday as well, that they had the right look. He described Alabama's defense on that play as bust, and that they felt like they should have been able to score on that play. And between the two freshmen, offensive linemen, one Gaston at right tackle and Dontrell Glover at right guard, they did not get LT Overton blocked on that play, and he blows it up in the backfield. So it happened so quickly. It was one of those moments as it's playing out, you're just trying to kind of understand what exactly happened. And I think you kind of felt the air go out of the stadium a little bit. I mean, there was still, I think, about 10 minutes left in the game, so it wasn't quite as dire as, okay, you know, the game is over now.
Sure.
But it proved to be the closest Georgia came to either tying the game or taking the lead. And they got, I think, one more possession after that. And then Alabama just took control and let the air out of the ball and was able to finish the thing off.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 here on ESPN 106.7. And all the dark spots that you could talk about Georgia, you feel like Chauncey Bowens is one of the guys that has continued to emerge. He had 12 carries for 119 yards and a touchdown. He's continued to get more and more carries in a Georgia backfield that has four or five names that you feel like they go to just about every single Saturday. Is the mindset for this offense, is it Kirby giving it to whoever has the hot hand or whoever has the better week of practice? How has that worked so far that you've seen in games? And then talk a little bit about what you've seen from Chauncey Bowens as well.
Yeah, no, I think you hit on it, that they're going to roll with the hot hand. And, you know, I mentioned the Nate Frazier fumble, and Kirby made this point after the fact that, you know, according to Kirby, they didn't play Nate Frazier after the fumble, not because of the fumble, but because they rolled with Chauncey Bowens, who had by far his best game as a Georgia Bulldog. And yeah, I was really impressed with Chauncey during that game. Showed a burst that really hadn't seen from him to this point in his career. He's only a redshirt freshman, so he's still a young back, but broke some big plays and really kept the Alabama defense on its toes. So yeah, really interested to see Saturday against Kentucky. My expectation is that we'll see Chauncey Bowens as the first back out there, but you know, I think that they're going to try to get Nate Frazier right. He's a guy that is really talented, that's had his moments, was Georgia's leading rusher last year, but the one thing that has been his biggest Achilles heel has been fumbles. He fumbled three times last season, and he's already fumbled twice in four games. So he's going to have to prove himself in practice this week. I'm sure it's been a big point of emphasis, but I think more than anything, aside from wanting to beat Kentucky on Saturday, I think they want to instill some confidence in some of these guys like Nate Frazier, like Talon Taylor, who I mentioned earlier. This is a good opportunity to get Nate right, to give him the ball, and for him to feel confident when he's out there that he can make a play and he can help the team in any way he can.
Well, following the loss to Alabama, you mentioned it, Georgia will now host Kentucky this Saturday morning, 11 a.m. at Sanford Stadium. So complete opposite. You go from a night game under the lights for Georgia to now an early kickoff against another SEC opponent, former SEC East opponent in the Kentucky Wildcats, who are 2-2 on the season. And that record may not even represent exactly what this Kentucky team is in a bad way. What can you tell us about Kentucky and what Georgia will try to exploit this Saturday morning?
Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating one just in terms of what Georgia does. I'm really interested to see if they can avoid sleepwalking. This is not a very good Kentucky team, as you alluded to. 2-2. I'll give them credit. You know, they hung around against Ole Miss, and last week they were actually leading South Carolina. But in the span of three plays against South Carolina, they had a fumble that was returned for a touchdown and then an interception that was returned for a touchdown. Kentucky's run game, pretty impressive. Passing game is just a total disaster right now. They started the season without Calzada, which Auburn fans may remember.
He
was there briefly after a stop at A&M and then before a stop at Incarnate Word. He's been hurt. They've turned it over to Cutter Bowley, who is a redshirt freshman, and he has really struggled. The passing game just been a struggle, and this is a Kentucky team that feels like has really faded in the last few years under Mark Stoops. Guy's accomplished quite a bit, has done a very good job, and inherited a pretty messy situation at Kentucky.
Yeah.
And has done a good job, but this is not a very competitive Kentucky right now. I want to see Georgia come out and start the game strong, because you know, coming off that loss to Alabama, I'll be interested just to see what the atmosphere is like. You know, 11 a.m. Central, 12 p.m. kick. I don't know how much the fans will be in it, but it would really help the team if they show up fast and inspire a little confidence after last week's disappointment.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us on the phone lines right now. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs basketball and football. And when you look at this Georgia team now moving forward, right, Jordan? Yes, with Kentucky, of course, Auburn next week, where Georgia comes to Jordan-Hare under the lights for that big game. And I think there's unfortunately going to be a lot more focus on what Auburn can do versus what Georgia can do there. But just looking at the schedule and the rest of the season as a whole, I mean, are the goals still the same, right? Are the goals still to compete for that SEC championship and make it to the college football playoff as one of the top seeds, and whether that be a bye or hosting a game at Sanford Stadium? I mean, games against Ole Miss, which could end up being a top 10 matchup, Texas, which could be a top 10 matchup, and Georgia Tech, as of right now, a top 25 game. I mean, are the goals still the same for this Georgia team following the loss last week?
100%. And again, it kind of goes to this Kentucky team, this Kentucky game, what this response looks like. But no, I mean, I think the biggest thing when you look at that Alabama loss, and this was part of what I was writing when they were playing at Tennessee, and it kind of was setting up for Tennessee to kick the field goal to win it late. You know, these losses early in the season when you're a team of Georgia's caliber, and, you know, I still think Georgia is a playoff caliber team. Your margin for error just shrinks pretty significantly when you lose a game in September. So, like you said, getting through the rest of this thing is not going to be easy. I mean, if they were to play on Saturday, Georgia hosts Ole Miss. That'll be mid-October. I'd pick Ole Miss with just the way they're playing. Trinidad Chambliss playing really well. Ole Miss has done a very good job and had a very impressive win over LSU on Saturday, but you know, mentioning the Auburn game, that feels like a huge moment for Hugh Freeze as he tries to settle things down and get things going in the right direction. The Florida game in Jacksonville, we've seen weird stuff, and by that point, you know, that might kind of be Billy Napier's last stand. What does that look like? A game you guys didn't mention that I think could be really, really interesting, at Mississippi State in November. I mean, they came so close to beating Tennessee. Again, this game is in Starkville, and they put up a lot of yards on Georgia last year when they were not as good. So, yeah, I think the goal is still the playoff, but your margin for error got so much smaller. I feel pretty confident Georgia's got at least one more loss in them. I think they could take that and still make the playoff, you know, as a 10-2 team. But if we start talking 9-3, if you drop a couple more of these games, it starts to become, you know, far-fetched to feel good at least that you can make the playoff and still be in the championship hunt.
Jordan, I know that it's baseball season. I know you don't cover that as much with the Georgia side of things, but with the Braves being out of it, do you have a World Series favorite for this year?
It's hard to go against the Dodgers, and I don't just say that because my wife is a diehard Los Angeles fan, so I've been watching some of that. But, the Dodgers seem like the team to beat. I mean, for me, I'm rooting for the Mariners to make a run. You know, really the only consolation as a Braves fan has been that the Mets are not in the hunt. I don't know if either of you have New York fans. But, there will be watching a lot of Dodgers games here. I can't really sit here and tell you I'll be rooting for that team. But I think they're going to be very tough to beat. And I was telling this to Justin Ferguson earlier today. As much as I'd love the Braves to be in this thing, it's kind of fun watching the MLB playoff and not have a dog in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of just enjoy, you know, the moments like last night, the Yankees Red Sox. It was a fun time, and looking forward to still watching some baseball, even if my team's not in it.
Jordan, that's what Auburn loves to do with the college football playoff. We love to just watch and not have a dog in the fight. That's
no stress at all.
Just get to watch football.
You know, I mean, I'm a Falcons fan, so that's the NFL playoff.
Yeah, you understand that big time with the Falcons. Look, if they could just not lose to the Panthers, they'd be all right, Jordan.
You know, other than that, you know, everything's going just swell. I'll tell you that. Rise up.
Jordan Hill, Dogs 247. We love having him. He's our weekly guest on Wednesday afternoons covering all things Georgia Bulldogs. My man, always appreciate you and your time. Tell people where they can find you and where they can get more information on Georgia if they're looking for it.
Definitely. Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. So, getting ready for this Kentucky game. We'll have all kinds of preview stuff the next few days. And we can go ahead and kind of tease next week with Georgia going to Auburn. I know that me and Nathan King from over at Auburn Undercover will have a lot of content between us. And I think we're going to try to do a preview podcast on Thursday. So I hope the Auburn folks listening get ready for that one. I think it will be a fun one. And looking forward to being back in Jordan-Hare. And see what that looks like next Saturday night.
I heard that's your favorite place in the world. They named it after you, so I'm sure you'll be there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to share, you know, whose jersey I'm going to be wearing up in the press box or anything like that. But, no, it'll be a good time.
Jordan, we appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk to you again next week, which will be a big-time conversation.
All right, sounds great. Appreciate you guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Go check him out. Again, Dogs247.com. Recovers Georgia better than anybody. And look, imagine not having your team in the playoffs or winning baseball games in the postseason. Could not be me, baby. Couldn't be me. Yeah, Red Sox, baby. Ain't nobody want to talk about it, but guess what? We're going to talk about it. That was an awesome game. I don't care.
Chapman almost did postseason Chapman to a T.
Oh, he tried so hard to be postseason Chapman. And we've talked about it the last 2.5 months.
Oh, of how great he's looked. And I've said, just wait.
Yep, just wait. I've seen the story. He's done it in that stadium wearing the other team's jersey. Yeah. That's what's so crazy about it.
It's been quite literally like, what are we going to see? Just watch us.
Just watch. Yeah.
I thought Stanton was going deep, man. I really did.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Yeah. They were like, he's had 18 home runs in the postseason or whatever that stupid stat was. And
as soon as it was lefty-lefty with Chisholm and I think it was Grisham, I thought that was over because the sinker is disgusting.
Yeah.
But I thought Stanton was going to run into one. And there was, I think it was a 1-2 sinker at the top of the zone that he fouled straight back, and that was the pitch right there.
Yeah, no, that was it. That was the one. But
good old TB, as we like to call it.
Yes, ain't no doubt. Well, hey, we appreciate Jordan for joining us as he does every Wednesday. We'll take our final break. We'll talk a little bit of something. I don't really know. We'll talk about something when we come back. We'll end hour number one, and then we have some exciting stuff coming up in hour number two. So stick with us. We'll wrap up the first hour after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrap it up, hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we get into hour number two, where we're going to have a baseball power hour for the first time in a long time, and it's a postseason edition of a baseball power hour. Also, not a firing edition, but a change in leadership edition of the baseball power hour. I don't know how we want to describe that, but...
I'm getting fired.
I said change in leadership.
Sure. I am stepping down to assume other roles.
You're just taking a front office role. That's what
correct. I have a 4 o'clock flight to to New York to go. Surprise!
Oh, God.
I'm sending a picture from the short porch to you tonight.
I would be very jealous if you were doing that. No, you are. Dipping out, Christian. Only here for the first hour. You said you hated our man Lindsey Crosby, who is going to be joining us in just a few moments.
Yeah, he said he wanted to come in and talk baseball, and I was like, yeah, I don't really watch or cover any of that, so I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, from the former college swimmer, I would imagine you wouldn't want to talk baseball. So,
yeah.
No, you are going to tip out, and so you'll be back tomorrow. Yeah, you'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow will be a full show for you, but Lindsey Crosby is going to be joining us in the studio for a baseball power hour. We are going to talk postseason with some excellent games yesterday and last night. Great games are already underway. One game in the bottom of the eighth, the Guardians and the Tigers. Another game, the Padres and the Cubbies. You also have the Red Sox and the Yankees going at it again tonight from Yankee Stadium, and then Dodgers-Reds again. Plus, big news for the Atlanta Braves as Snit is not out. He's just, again, moving his role. He's moving into a front office role after the phrase of, I'm unsure of my future. You said it, Christian. It's like, does that not tell you everything you need to know right there? And at least he wasn't fired, right?
Yeah, I mean, at least he wasn't. I mean, it could have been worse, but...
Could have been.
No. Rocchio with a solo shot in the home half of the eighth, and then back-to-back doubles. Guardians with a 3-1 lead, trying to ruin Casey Mize's three-inning starting performance that was relatively solid.
Yeah, and their season's up for grabs. Cleveland's got to win today because Detroit beat him yesterday. You've got the Padres and Cubs going at it right now as well. We're talking all things baseball and some Auburn baseball, too. We got some news on that front as well. We'll have that for you coming up in hour number two. Christian's dipping out, but Lindsey Crosby steps in. We have a baseball power hour coming up next.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and we appreciate you being with us here in hour number two. If you missed any of the first hour, Christian Griffin, my co-host, was with me, as he always is. He is not with us for the second hour. He had to dip out a little bit early, and so if you missed any of our conversations in hour number one, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com in our podcast center. We posed a fun question about Auburn football, the lack of scoring on the road against Texas A&M, and how many other SEC teams could have gone on the road and won that particular game last week at Texas A&M. So we talked a lot about that. Plus, read off some of the newest quotes from head coach Hugh Freeze in his SEC teleconference today, and they were fascinating, per usual. And then we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, our Georgia beat writer, our Georgia insider, who joins us every single Wednesday. We talked to him about Georgia losing to Alabama last week, preparing for Kentucky this week, and what lies ahead, including the trip to Auburn this time next week. So that was all in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And since Christian had to leave, I recruited somebody just as qualified and probably more talented. We bring in a guy, a friend of ours, friend of the show, friend of the program, for a baseball power hour, one we have not had in way too long. Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today and the Braves Postcast is with us in the studio. My friend, it is so good to see you.
It is. I am so thrilled to be here, and I love the fact that I'm sitting across from you in Christian's seat, and I can see the Braves Today sticker on your laptop.
Yeah.
Thank you for the support.
You're welcome. I've had that on there whenever. I don't remember when you gave that to me, but there's a lot of stickers on there, but I made room for you, my friend.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the support. I am constantly amazed with how much people have been willing to give of their time, their email inbox, their money for Braves Today and what we're trying to do over there.
Yeah, so you guys do great work. And your season has come to an end because of the Atlanta Braves. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that and talk about what is now a change in leadership. A new manager will be in the dugout next year for the Atlanta Braves, with Brian Snitker stepping down or parting ways or moving roles or I don't know what language. We'll get into that a little bit later, because that is big news for the Atlanta Braves. Yeah. Who missed the postseason, will now have a new manager. And we'll discuss that as we go. But if you're new here and you have not been with us for a baseball power hour, we bring in our guy, Lindsey Crosby, who covers Major League Baseball and college baseball more and better than anybody that I know. And we try to do this periodically, and now seems like a great time because the postseason is underway. And that's what we talk about to start hour number two. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. If you have comments or questions on baseball, you can be a part of the show, call in and ask us, or preferably ask Lindsey, since he's much better at this than I am. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We've told you that we are carrying tons of postseason baseball here on ESPN 106.7, including the entirety of the Dodgers-Reds wildcard series, which game one was last night. Game two is tonight. We're carrying that. We're carrying divisional series for AL and NL and beyond. So all of that here on ESPN 106.7. But postseason's here, Lindsey, and day one was incredible, and day two is off to a fantastic start as well.
Yeah, the big theme of day one for me was just the fantastic pitching, right? You saw Garrett Crochet, you saw Max Fried, Tarik Skubal. Like, you just saw all of the aces going out and being aces. And to me, that is one of my favorite parts of one of opening day, but then two of the first day of the postseason, because it's almost always getting the aces. And today's not a bad day either. Auburn's own Casey Mize throwing for the Tigers, Brian Bello for your for your Red Sox, Yoshinobu Yamamoto tonight for the Dodgers, and then Zach Littell for the Reds.
But
just a lot of really close games. There's not really been any blowouts. Even what looked like a blowout last night in that Dodgers-Reds game, the Dodgers bullpen found a way to make it close.
Yeah, as they typically do.
Giving up a bunch of runs late. So just really, really good baseball. There's still some ugly stuff going on, but just tons of fun. And they're spaced out where you can watch three or four games in a day.
Yeah, postseason baseball is one of those. It's one of those sports where there's a lot of casual fans out there, and I know that term comes with negative connotation, right, a lot of times, but postseason baseball is one of those where I do I do recommend that people tune in and watch it or listen to it. I love, obviously, baseball on the radio as well. It's just one of those where when postseason comes around, the flow of baseball just leans into that so much because of it building, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, here comes, boom, there's a single. All right, here's a big walk. All right, here's the big double. You cut the lead in half. You can feel the build of baseball from batter to batter, pitch by pitch, and that's what makes postseason baseball one of the best in the world.
To me, it's the tension and how, right. Like, different from, say, basketball or hockey or whatever, I think what baseball does a really good job of in that sense right there is you can see, unless it's a home run, you can see the runners get on base and you can see the pitcher have to change what he does to account for that,
yeah.
Right? And you can see the defense. You can see everything change for that situation. I guess you'd liken it to a football offense getting inside the 20. And all of a sudden the defense has to kind of do things a little bit differently. But here it's so much more evident in baseball when all of a sudden you see, oh yeah, the infielders are all playing in, right? Mm-hmm. The tension is there. I love that. And that's one of my favorite parts about this. And the fact that baseball is the only sport where the defense controls the ball. And there's no, you can't run a clock out. Like you have to face the action. You have to get the 27 outs. But you have the ball. And I just, that's great to me. Because in football, obviously, you can run the clock out. You can kill clock. There's no killing clock in baseball.
Right.
You have to get through the play. And so you have to face it and you have to overcome it. And I just love that. Isn't October the best sporting month of the year?
It's up there. I think October or April is where I think those are the two arguments for me. October's a good one.
I was about to say, I've heard people say March because of March Madness. I haven't heard a lot of April.
April because of NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. You've got the national championship game for college basketball. You also
have
baseball getting started. You also have the Masters going on. Like there's April, there's a lot happening in April, but October, yes, you have the start of the NBA, the start of NHL, baseball postseason, college football, right? College basketball is right around the corner for that. I mean, October and April are the two for me that are the best.
Yeah, they really kind of hit. And these playoffs have not disappointed so far. And it's fun to think about, like, there's a lot of divisional matchups in here, right? Tigers versus Guardians, Red Sox versus Yankees. And then with some of these, like, for instance, if the Cubs beat the Padres, they'll face a divisional opponent in the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, in the Brewers.
Right,
gosh.
The Brewers.
Yeah. I was looking ahead. If the winner of Red Sox-Yankees will take on the Blue Jays. It's just funny to me how we're getting a kind of a bunch of rematches of things that happened early in the year. Because that's always a storyline in, like, football, too. Like, hey, you played this team in the regular season. Can you beat them again in the SEC championship game? Or can you beat them in the divisional round of the postseason after you played them twice in the regular season? That's you kind of get a little bit of that here, too. It's kind of fun.
But I do want to talk about the matchups, and we'll make some predictions and things. Even though we are a day and a half into the start of the postseason, we will make some picks and get your World Series prediction, Lindsay. But I first want to talk about some of the storylines of teams that did not make the postseason, including the Atlanta Braves. We could start there, an organization and a team that halfway through had a chance to make some moves, right? We had you on around that time of the trade deadline, and it just didn't seem like they were going to do a whole lot. That seemed to be the case. That was the case, and Atlanta did it in Atlanta fashion when they were all but eliminated, had a 0.01% chance, Lindsay. That's when the Braves decided to play their best baseball, rip off double-digit wins in a row, and still come up short of the playoffs.
Yeah, they finished 76-86, and I think what makes me feel a little bit better about the season is 10 games under 500, yes. But if you look at the runs they scored and the runs they allowed 10 more runs than they scored. So a run differential of minus 10. And typically that projects out to a record of close to 500, right? So yes, they were 10 games back, but it was a record of a team that should have been one or two games below 500. And I think a lot of that's just driven by how bad they were in one-run games.
Yeah.
I don't think people quite necessarily realize they were 21-35 in one-run games. It's a 375 winning percentage. I actually checked. It's the worst winning percentage in baseball for one-run games.
For this last season?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's really possible to see how a team can significantly, like, overperform in that area and make the postseason with a poor record, or they can underperform and miss the postseason. And I keep going back to 2023. The Miami Marlins in 2023, they made the postseason as a wild card. They weren't actually that good of a team. They were 84-78 overall, but their run differential was that of a team that was 12 games below 500. The reason they made the postseason and the reason they had a winning record is they went 33-14 in one-run games. They won 70% of their one-run games.
You're telling me close games matter for teams that make the postseason? Is that what you're telling me? You have to win close ball games?
You have to win close ball games, but you can be a better team than your record or a worse team than your record, and that is the thing. When you play 162 games, you could have 10 one-run games go the wrong way, and you are like, if Atlanta was just 500 in one-run games, they're a postseason team. Like they gain 7 games in the standings, which has them at 83 wins. They are tied with the Reds and the Mets. They have the tiebreaker on both those teams. And so if the Braves are just 500 in one-run games, they're a postseason team today. They're playing yesterday and today.
Yeah,
and it's just
crazy.
Like, but they were terrible in those situations, and instead they're at home, or actually they're getting ready to head on vacation because, yeah. But they're joining the Mets. The Mets are also on vacation, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about that in the first hour with Auburn fans who were upset about Auburn football, but we were talking Georgia, who Auburn fans could be happy that Georgia lost.
Yeah.
That's what the Braves can do. I mean, you can be sad that the Braves aren't in the playoffs, but you can also be happy that the Mets are not in the playoffs.
And not only be happy that the Mets are not in the playoffs, you can point out that that earlier in the year, they had the best record in baseball. It was a nice sample. It was like after 69 games, they had the best record in all of baseball.
Which doesn't lie,
yeah.
Right, with that sample size.
Exactly. And then they went from there to out of the postseason. And it's like, it's a generational collapse.
It's remarkable.
And it's just, I love it. It's so much fun.
334-321-1390. Phone lines are open here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line during the Baseball Power Hour. And Ty the Tiger, you want to talk a little baseball, my friend. What's up?
First BP, now Snit. Jerry Jones, man, your calling is coming, man. You've got to step down.
I think more people want Jerry Jones out than any other owner or manager or coach in the world.
The difference there is Jerry owns them, is making money off of them. Snit's just an employee.
Yeah,
BP was just an employee.
I'm just saying. You know, I didn't want BP to step down, and I was kind of thinking Snit would give it one more go. And then go, you know, I didn't think he'd go out like this. But from what I heard from him today, from what I heard quoted, I get it. You know, the guy said, I miss everything my kids did. I don't think I should miss everything my grandkids did. And I mean, I get it, man. You know, he's a legend, dude. His resume and stuff speaks for itself. So I'm happy for him. You know, I hope we go within and go Freddie Gonzalez. We've already been there and done that. I hope we go get someone else. Wanting from as a fan. Now I will say this about the Braves. I don't care who they get. They do not go buy some starting pitching. You know how you're talking about the Mets, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I really like, I hate the Mets, you know, just because I'm supposed to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I hate the Yankees more than anything. Because when I was a kid,
too. That's
who beat us in the World Series. That's who we had to go through. And so I hate the Yankees. So do you know how bad it made my stomach turn to watch Free just go out there and throw 102 shutdown, lockdown pitches in the postseason and just think, wow, he would have took a pay cut for us? And we were too cheap to keep that man.
But leave it to Aaron Boone to pull him out in a big game where he was still – I know he had started to break down a little bit, but he was still just pumping.
The guy on the other side went 117 pitches. Yeah.
Yeah, he threw 102 pitches, and they take him out. This pitch count, man, you know, Nolan Ryan would have put his manager in that Robin Ventura headlock. He went out there and tried to take him out in the middle of that game, dude. I mean,
baseball's a different sport, man.
Either way. I'm just saying, man. We got to go get some pitches. We didn't pay Freed, who wanted to, we could have got him a lot cheaper than New York did. We've got to go get some pitching. Strider does not look like his old self. Maybe he bounces back when he gets a little bit more off season and rehab under his, you know, his velocity can come back. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to, I mean, our best pitcher this year was 40 years old. Now he was dominant, but I mean, you know, we've got to go get some young pitching and pay somebody. That's what I think. Did y'all see the move by the Angels? I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, Ron Washington is coming back as manager. They were better when he was managing before he stepped out for the quadruple heart bypass, and they said it wasn't because of the medical stuff. It was because of performance. But they were a better team with him than they were under interim manager Casey Montgomery. And they're not keeping either one of them. The actual rumor is that Albert Pujols is going to be brought back to be the manager. Owner Art Moreno wants Albert Pujols.
That was what I was talking about. And I think that is exciting. If I'm an Angels fan, I'm excited. Cardinals, you dropped the ball again.
For the Cardinals to keep Ollie Marmol with a new president of baseball operations in place, just to then watch him go manage the Angels instead, is a little bit frustrating if you're a Cardinals fan. It's got to be frustrating seeing one of your legends who you could have for you instead go over there. Now, the question is, can he manage that well? Like, he's not been a manager for that long. It's all been down in Latin America. Can he manage in MLB? That's the question. But we've seen other guys make the transition straight into their, like, Stephen Vogt, who's managing the Guardians right here in the postseason in, like, his third season in the role.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's an awesome move. Whether it works out or not, it'll sell some seats, you know. And I like Albert. He's always been a great guy as far as to the fans and everybody, all his teammates, everything, as far as all I've heard, you know, just being a fan. But, guys, all right, so last thing I want to do is it's hard to say, man, but if I had to put some money on it, I've got the Phillies playing the Yankees in the World Series. I absolutely hope that every ball game ends in a tie.
I was about to say, I hate both of those teams, man.
Team Meteor. Both of Team teams. Meteor.
Yeah.
I said if I was putting money on it, I want to see the Indians and the Padres. That's who I'm rooting for.
Okay.
But you got to separate your money from your fandom.
That's right.
Just throwing that out there.
That's right.
Always great, guys. War Damn Eagle.
Appreciate the call, Todd. Thanks, good to hear from you. 334-321-1390. More thoughts on that as we go. We are going to talk the Braves. We are going to talk Snitker. We are going to talk possible replacements as well, plus make our playoff predictions when we come back. We're just underway in hour number two, a baseball power hour with our man Lindsey Crosby in studio. We continue that right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on with a baseball power hour. Our man Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today, also Braves Postcast, and anything baseball related. This guy does it. He writes, he podcasts, he does it all, and we appreciate him being with us on the show today. Again, no Christian Griffin for the second hour. We had him for the first hour. He'll be back tomorrow. And talking some of the more storylines around Major League Baseball, about teams that didn't make the postseason before we make our true predictions for the playoffs, the matchups and things. We'll probably carry this into the next segment before talking more Braves and Brian Snitker. But Braves, of course, did not make the postseason. The Houston Astros did not make the postseason, and the world rejoiced and said hallelujah. The Mets did not make the postseason. There's a lot of interesting stories and teams, Lindsey, that are doing the same thing we are, which is watching games on TV and listening to them on the radio.
Yeah, the Houston Astros is the one where they were in control of a playoff spot and they just got nailed with injuries, right? Like, they lost some more pitchers, which they seemingly do every year. And then they lost Yordan Alvarez, and they just couldn't keep up. They finished like 4-6 in their last 10 games. Seattle goes 7-3 in their last 10 games.
Yeah.
And those three losses were all after they had won the division. So, like, just it was just too little too late for the Astros. The Mets, we kind of touched on it, the generational collapse there. The thing that's wild to me is that people have kind of started to forget about the Tigers and their collapse. They were easily winning the AL Central and just had a terrible final month. Heck, the final week of the year, they go 2-8. Like they got in the postseason simply because Houston also collapsed. If Houston's a little bit better, Houston has a wild card. Detroit's at home. And, I mean, I think they were actually tied in the standings, and Houston, Detroit had the tiebreaker. It's the only reason they made it in. But the big thing to me is you can see the impact of money on the field. Like, yes, the Brewers don't have a giant payroll. Seattle doesn't have a giant payroll. But all the rest of these, you know, the Guardians, all those teams are like below average on payroll. Everybody else is like a top 10 team spending wise.
Yeah.
The Phillies, the Dodgers, the Cubs should spend a lot more than they do. They're owned by a billionaire. Their owner, the Ricketts family, has a higher net worth than the Steinbrenner family. Wow. The Cubs should spend a lot more than they do and they cry poverty. But the Red, like so many of these teams just have so much money. And are the teams that are able to, or even if they don't have massive amounts of money and massive payrolls, they're able to give out the massive deals, like Toronto giving Vlad Guerrero a massive contract. And so we've seen it's incredibly hard if you don't either have the ability to run a giant payroll. I'm sorry, let's reword that. The willingness.
There it is.
Because they have the money. The willingness to run a giant payroll, or the willingness to spend big money to retain the stars that you develop. If you're not in one of those two buckets, it's very, very hard to make the postseason. There's a couple teams here, but not many.
Which is so crazy what you just said right there. The idea to pay the stars that you developed, to pay the dudes that you had already invested in.
I didn't even think about saying that to a Red Sox fan.
Yeah. Yeah. What a crazy idea
that is. What a crazy idea. Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, all leaving. And then signing Rafi and then trading Rafi Devers to the Giants.
Yeah, but don't worry. You bring in Bregman, Story, those types of guys, and then call up every prospect that you have. And it's worked. I mean, the Red Sox are in the postseason. You go and sign a couple of pitchers, obviously. I mean, it's worked in Boston. It's just in untraditional ways.
And they've tried to get out in front of this decision in the future by signing some of these kids to extensions. And that's really the way you should do it. And we've seen a bigger willingness from MLB now, from MLB teams, to extend these young players. Jackson Churio of the Brewers got a deal before he debuted last year. The Padres are in here. Jackson Merrill got a deal. Cincinnati Reds got in here. I believe they extended, was it Green or Lodolo or both? They haven't paid Ellie yet. But like a lot of these teams have been willing. The Guardians paid pretty good money. They got a discount, but pretty good money to keep Jose Ramirez. Just a willingness to pay their young stars early, before these guys hit free agency. And I think that's the thing. If you're not going to be active in free agency at the top of the market, which a lot of teams just are not going to do it, you have to be willing to pay your stars a bunch of money, like Toronto did, like Cleveland did, or you have to assume the risk of signing some of these young prospects when they first come up, understanding that they may not work out down the road. And you can look at teams like the Braves. Most of theirs have worked out. But there's plenty of teams that have their extensions have not worked out. And they've had to figure out what to do later.
Am I in a small camp as we're getting bumped out of here with the music? Am I in a small camp that I'm happy for a guy like Terry Francona in the Reds for making the postseason?
I'm so thrilled for Tito. That team kept fighting down the stretch. And that's a thing. I love to see that get rewarded with. They didn't think they'd be in the postseason a month ago.
No.
They didn't add at the deadline. And guess what? They kept fighting. They're in the postseason. I love
now,
it.
They're going to lose, but they at least made the playoffs.
They'll lose tonight and be done, but
correct.
They're in, and that's what matters.
That's what matters. So we'll talk a little bit more postseason baseball right after this. Maybe make some World Series predictions before we talk about the Braves and who could be the new guy in the clubhouse. We'll talk about that with Lindsey Crosby right after this. We've got 30 more minutes of a baseball power hour here on ESPN.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Happy first day of October for those of you that celebrate one of the greatest sports months of the year. And the weather is somewhat cooperating. It's not 1,000 degrees outside, which is nice, and it makes it to where you want to talk baseball, which is what we continue to do in the studio with our man Lindsey Crosby. Plug it all, my friend. Tell the folks what you've got going on. I know it's supposed to be slowing down a little bit since the Braves are done, but I have a feeling you'll find something else to do.
Yeah, I've cut out one thing because we're not doing the Braves postcast, the live postgame show with Locked On. After the Braves games, we've cut that out. But Braves Today is both a podcast and a newsletter over at bravestoday.com. There's also MLB Game Night, which covers every single game, every single night from now through the end of the postseason. I am part of the five-man hosting crew, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, I'm doing that live when the final game ends. And then, obviously, still working as much as I can on Auburn baseball stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're bringing that show back next spring.
Yeah, looking forward to Auburn baseball. We'll talk about that in the final segment. There is some news with Auburn baseball. Some games got announced today.
Schedule stuff, yeah.
So we'll talk about that and what that season could look like for what I think will be one of the most talented teams in the country for Butch Thompson and the Auburn Tigers. But let's talk some postseason before we talk a little Braves. And, again, we are kind of cheating here a little bit because we're a day and a half into postseason baseball. But the matchups have been, I think, really fun. The Red Sox-Yankees, for me personally, last night was a ton of fun. Tigers Guardians has been great. Padres Cubs has been great. Another good one going on right now. Padres lead the Cubs 1-0 in that best of three, top of five in Chicago. And then the Dodgers and the Reds was last night. All those games again today. One game went final. Guardians keep their season alive, beating the Tigers 6-1. That game was 1-1 in the eighth. And they find a way to tack on five runs and take down the Tigers. Again, Padres Cubs going on right now. Red Sox Yankees starts again 5:00, and then Reds Dodgers right here on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, lots of fun matchups there. And for sake of being accurate here, I did put these predictions on social media on yesterday morning.
Okay.
So these are the same. I'm not just saying this because we know what happens.
Okay. Well, enlighten us. What did you feel going into this postseason? Team to beat, underdog, maybe, you know, overrated, things like that. What did you have in mind?
So team winning the whole thing. You want to do that first or last?
Last.
Okay.
Come on,
Lindsey. Okay. Sorry.
Come on.
I have to
You haven't been out of radio that long.
I've been out of radio that long. Okay. See, podcasting, you do the big thing first. Okay. So overrated team I have in this postseason, the New York Yankees.
Love it.
I know you do. The New York Yankees, well, one, it's just a bad matchup with Boston.
Yeah.
Right? Boston won 10 of 14 from them this year, including six of the last seven in New York. Mm-hmm. Brian Bello by himself has been just amazing against the Yankees. He's been like one of the best pitchers in baseball against the Yankees. I think it's a 2.35 ERA and 11 starts. It's a terrible matchup. They may make a game three, but I just... The defense is bad. The lineup's not deep enough, and you can't really trust the bullpen that much. So I have the Yankees going out in the wild card round to your Red Sox.
And in a best of three series, I felt like the Yankees had to get game one because I felt confident in the Red Sox. Yes, I'm a fan, but just from the matchup perspective, I just felt that, and still do, that the Red Sox are the better team. And look, Yankees had a 1-0 lead late. You pull Max Fried, and here come the Red Sox.
Yep.
Here come the Red Sox, Garrett Crochet. I said yesterday on social media, if Tarik Skubal doesn't exist, Garrett Crochet is the best pitcher in baseball, which I think there's still an argument that he is.
He's probably the runner-up for the AL Cy Young,
yeah,
honestly.
Exactly.
I mean, it's one, lesson should be always trade for a stud pitcher.
Just always.
If he's available, go get him.
Yep.
But two, you let the best of the best go as long as they can.
Yeah.
And like they pulled Fried, the bullpen screwed it up late.
That's what the Yankees do.
Yeah, there you go. Team I have that I don't think is getting enough credit, Seattle.
Love it.
Everybody thinks that Seattle is just Cal Raleigh, but Seattle has been a good team overall, and it is incredibly hard to hit in that ballpark. That is that ballpark causes more strikeouts than normal. I don't think a lot of people realize how tough things are in T-Mobile Park, but when you look at Seattle, like from a home run perspective, they were top three in baseball. Yes, Cal Raleigh led the league with 60, but they were top three for home runs in all of baseball. And teams 1 and 2 also in the playoffs in the Yankees and Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they can hit for power, and it's not just him. The second half from Julio Rodriguez was a lot better, and that rotation is filthy. I mean, with Brian Wu and Gilbert, just they're so amazing.
You're saying they're just not getting, the Mariners are not getting enough love here.
The Mariners are not getting enough respect from everybody. Now, I do have the ALCS going probably seven games, and I do have Toronto beating Seattle. But I have Toronto versus Seattle in the ALDS.
Wow.
Simply because, or ALCS.
In the CS, yeah.
Simply because Seattle is incredibly underrated by everybody because they think the offense is just Cal Raleigh. And they think the pitching staff is just like one or two good pitchers.
I just don't believe in the Tigers Guardians in a full series with the Mariners. I mean, the fact that they've split in their two games together, they have a game three. Is that tomorrow that they'll play another game three? And then you have to go, the winner of that, congratulations, you get to fly across the country and go play Seattle in a best of five at that point. Like, I just don't trust them against the Mariners. I will say, though, Lindsey, I'm not a believer in the Blue Jays in the postseason right now. That may be completely blinded by my Red Sox fandom, but I think the Red Sox, if they pull it off tonight or even tomorrow against the Yankees, I like the Red Sox to find a way to pull it off against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, well, the thing with the Blue Jays is they do it simply because they make you beat them. The Blue Jays have the second least strikeouts in baseball, and they had one of the highest team batting averages in baseball. Actually, I think it may have been the top. Let me check real quick. Yeah, they had the best batting average in baseball by a full 7 points. Like, they are really good at putting the ball in play and making you make a play. Boston's outfield defense is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Winston and Rafael is in center. The infield defense is not good.
Yeah.
And Toronto thrives on putting the ball in play and making you make plays. They're also very good at converting their own ground balls and balls into play into outs. Like, so you have, like, you can beat Toronto, but you have to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you beat Toronto, you won against Toronto.
Which is hard to do in a 5 or 7 game series.
Exactly. Over enough time, this kind of stuff averages out. Now, if there's a weakness with Toronto, it comes to the pitching staff. Like, it comes to, you have to look at a situation where I feel really good about game one. After game one, it's like, okay, what do we do? Like Kevin Gausman's going to go. He's going to be great. After that, is it Shane Bieber for game two? Is it Max Scherzer for game three? Is it prospect Trey Yesavage?
Like, who all have had their moments.
Who've all had their moments. They're all quality. But unless they can get Chris Bassett and Jose Berrios off the IL, you're really kind of, because they're both down with inflammation that came up in September. Back for one, elbow for the other. If they can come back, I feel good about the rotation. If they can't, it's kind of a problem. And Bo Bichette being on the IL actually makes their infield defense better. He's a terrible shortstop, but he hit 300 on the year. So, like,
you got to have him in there, yeah.
Exactly. So, like, they have the pieces. Andre Jimenez can play short and can be okay. But the question for them is the rotation. If the rotation's there, I like them to make the World Series.
So you have Blue Jays Mariners in the ALCS. No matter who they play, you have the two divisional winners moving on to the American League Championship Series. What about the division? What about the NL side of things? What about the NLDSs and the NLCS? What matchups do you have there?
I have the Dodgers beating the Reds and taking on Philly. And I have them beating Philly.
Wow.
I know. And it's going to be, these are going to be high scoring games. I trust the rest of the Dodgers lineup more than I trust the rest of the Phillies lineup. Like, yes, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner, they're good. But do I trust the 4, 5, and 6 hitters of the Dodgers more than the 4, 5, 6 hitters of the Phillies?
Yep.
I kind of do. Will Smith's better than JT Realmuto, right? You look at all the, Mookie Betts and all these guys versus Alec Boehm, you know, Edmundo Sosa. Like, I the outfield for Philly. Like, I just like the Dodgers offense better. I think from a pitching perspective, the Philly starters are more accomplished. The Dodgers starters have just as good of stuff. And in the postseason, it doesn't really matter other than the top guys if you can go 7 innings. Because usually, you're not going to. You're going to go 4 or 5. They're going to pull you for somebody else unless you're a stud. I also think that Philly's bullpen isn't that much better than LA's. LA's bullpen's a problem, but they have the traits to be good. They just haven't shown it. Philly's bullpen is really Johan Duran and a bunch of dudes. It's like Johan Duran, you and me.
Yeah.
Orion Kerkering's not been the same guy. Alvarado's suspended. And so the offense is deeper for LA. And then on the relief side, at least LA has more options in the bullpen that they can try and find one that works.
Sure.
Over Philly. Philly has Duran and a bunch of dudes. Or a bunch of guys. Not a bunch of dudes. A bunch of guys.
Yeah.
So I've got that. And then I've got the Padres beating the Cubs.
Who, by the way, Machado just hit a two-run bomb to go up 3-0 on
the Cubs.
There
you go.
To get back in the series.
Which would tie the series if the score holds. Simply because who best can hold a lead in this series? The Cubs bullpen is really shallow. The Padres bullpen is the hardest throwing and the deepest bullpen in the game. They have four dudes who could all be closers and have been closers for other teams. The average bullpen velocity for the Padres is like 98 miles an hour. It's the highest in baseball. And some of the stuff I was reading is in the pitch tracking era, which is like 2012, this is the hardest throwing bullpen that's ever been assembled.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, they are just very, very, they throw strikes, they make you hit them, and it's very hard to do that. And then the defense isn't bad for them either. So
you think that's good enough to beat Chicago? Is it good enough to beat Milwaukee?
I don't think it is.
So Milwaukee and L.A.
Milwaukee and L.A., and I've got L.A. beating Milwaukee and going to the World Series. I know.
Lindsay, come on, man.
Listen. Everybody else tells you what you want. I tell you what you need. Okay?
All right, so Dodgers out of the National League. Between Blue Jays, Mariners, is the historic season continuing on to the World Series? Do the Mariners get to the Fall Classic?
I don't think they do.
Oh,
I think this is a coastal matchup between Toronto and LA, and I think the Dodgers win a second straight World Series.
Gosh.
And it's not fun.
Just turn the radio off.
It's not fun, but that's what I think happens. And, you know, it's just one of those.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it is a little disgusting. I don't love it either, but.
I think you're probably onto something, though. I mean, it's not a bold prediction, but it's probably a pretty accurate prediction. Yeah. So,
I mean, hot take, he's taking number one seeds. Like,
yeah.
But I'm sorry. LA's not a number one seed. They're a number three seed.
Toronto's
a number one seed.
Christian yells at me when I pick Scotty Scheffler to win golf tournaments. It's like, I think he's going to win because he's the best player in the world.
Yeah. Like, LA's that's the most talent I've ever seen on one baseball team. Like, it's hard to pick against them.
Yeah.
Yes, they have flaws. But at the same time, dudes can turn it on in the postseason.
That's true.
Will Smith, 2021 Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
Not a good closer in the regular year. He didn't allow a run the entire postseason. They win the World Series.
I mean, it's what it takes sometimes.
And then he was so not good that they traded him away the next year.
So
like,
not good.
But, again, he struggled in the regular season, did not allow a single run in the postseason. Like, that's just, it happens sometimes. It's going to happen with LA. They have too many dudes for someone to not emerge from that pen as a shutdown, just monster.
Lindsay's prediction is the Dodgers to win the World Series. Yay. All baseball fans are just so excited to watch Los Angeles do it again and win the World Series. Well, there is more news to talk about, and it's locally. It's home. It's about the Atlanta Braves and who their new man will be with the news of Brian Snitker no longer being the manager of the Braves. We'll get Lindsay's initial thoughts on who that could be or what the Braves are looking for, plus a little bit of news on Auburn baseball as well as we wrap up our Baseball Power Hour right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's been a very awesome baseball power hour. Our man Lindsey Crosby's in the studio. We've talked a lot of baseball things, but before we drop some Auburn baseball news, just some scheduling things that we'll talk about in a moment. Your initial thoughts on Brian Snitker stepping down and no longer being the head man for the Atlanta Braves.
The official wording, I think, was transitioning to a special advisor role, which I thought there was rules about that now. But he's one of the most accomplished managers in Braves history. He's third all time in wins for a franchise that's been around for 130 something years, right? He won a World Series, and he's a guy who never expected or insisted that he be the manager. He reluctantly had to be convinced to take over as interim, and the players were the ones that pushed for him to be the full-time manager. So to manage for 10 years is pretty cool. I did have issues and still do with like minor tactical stuff. I don't think he managed a bullpen very well. A lot of managers get that wrong. But for the most part, players liked him. He was like, he ran that clubhouse. And when everybody talks about one of the advantages the Atlanta Braves have in acquiring players is they want to play for Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Part of it is the history. These guys grew up watching the Braves on TV as a kid. You know, because of TBS. Shout out TBS and Ted Turner. But another part of it is that the reputation inside the game is that that clubhouse is one of the best places to be in all of baseball. And he's a big part of that. I'm happy that that he gets to enjoy his 50th year in the organization without a lot of pressure, being a special advisor. I wish we had had more of a chance to recognize him in the season.
Right. Maybe that was by design.
Maybe that was by design.
Some guys don't like the parade, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he apparently didn't decide until like Monday, Tuesday.
And the players just found out.
The players found out yesterday, and so a bunch of them were in the press conference this morning up in Atlanta. But I'm also excited to see what Atlanta can do. I do think everybody needs to be mindful of managerial hires can go wrong. Like, there's no guarantee the next guy's better than Brian Snitker.
Sure.
And Atlanta hasn't really had a true managerial search in a long time. It's probably been 30 years since they actually had to go out and hire a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time a job's come open, they've had somebody ready to go internally, for the most part.
Which doesn't seem to be the case right now.
So there, a couple people I've talked to in and around the organization, not people who are making the decision, but people who I've talked to have the impression or the thought that the leader in the clubhouse right now is Walt Weiss, current bench coach of the Braves, former shortstop for the Braves, and that if he were to get the job, it would be the idea of we want continuity. Rick Kranitz, the pitching coach, is going to come back in that case. Tim Hyers, the hitting coach, is going to come back in that case. Eddie Perez is going to come back. There's talk that they would bring Ron Washington back, make him a bench coach. Freddie Gonzalez would stay. You'd have a lot of continuity on the staff. You'd just be replacing the head man. So that's kind of one thing I've heard a little bit of. But outside of that, and I wrote this up over on BravesToday.com back in August, David Ross makes a ton of sense for the Braves.
That would be an awesome hire.
He checks a lot of boxes. He's been a player recently enough to relate to the current group of players, right? It's not that same fatherly figure
sure.
that Snit has, but can relate to the players because he was doing that grind just a couple years ago. For the front office, he played recently enough where he understands and values the analytics without being married to them, right? For Braves country, it's that connection to the old Atlanta Braves without the idea of just running it back, when just running, you know, just promoting the next guy and keeping everything the exact same. Mm-hmm. If you're not happy with how this season went, the idea of having a connection to Bobby Cox, but not one of Bobby Cox's old coaches, makes you feel like, okay, it's an outside voice, but one that understands what it means to be an Atlanta Brave.
Yeah, that would be really special, I think. And so we'll be keeping our eyes on that. Of course, when something like that happens, Lindsay, hopefully we can get you back on yep. and talk about the next manager for the Atlanta Braves. We've got about a minute and a half before we get out of here. Quickly, Auburn Baseball made some announcements today about upcoming schedule with a little bit of a tournament round robin. How are they doing this? Tell the people what they need to know.
So the Amegi Bank College Baseball Series, it's in Arlington, Texas, at the home of the Rangers. They did this last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it again this year. They'll play Florida State, Louisville, and Kansas State. They have a night game, a midday game, and an early morning game in February. It's like 21st, 22nd, 23rd, I think. They did this last year. Butch loves these things because, one, it's an early road trip to get the guys to bond together, but then also it gives them a glimpse of how they're going to do against high-level competition.
And in a major league ballpark.
Yes, with those dimensions. They'll play Florida State, they'll play Louisville, they'll play Kansas State. Last year they played two tournament teams. They played Ohio State, they played Oregon State, and they played someone else. They won all three games. But it was our first glimpse as media of really how good that team was. Is we saw them go into this tournament against two ranked teams, and they beat all three of them, and they beat two of them pretty handily.
Yeah, they did.
So there's a lot of reasons to love this. It'll be streamed online so you can watch it. If you have a chance to go out there, it's a wonderful ballpark. I've been like half a dozen times now because my mom lives in Dallas. Tons of fun. They'll do that for the second straight year. And then the schedule this year is going to be kind of a fun mix, right? They have Texas at home.
Yeah.
So a lot of fun stuff coming this season.
Yep. Auburn baseball, it'll be here before we know it. Not to wish away football or basketball season, but Butch Thompson's got a really talented squad, and we'll be previewing that pretty much once the calendar turns to 2026, and we'll be talking a lot of Auburn baseball and more. Lindsey Crosby joining us. We had a baseball power hour. Plug it all one more time on the way out, my friend.
I'm on social media at Crosby Baseball, the podcast, the Braves Today podcast, where you get your podcasts, and the newsletter, bravestoday.com.
Awesome. He is the man. Lindsey Crosby joined us all of hour number two. Christian Griffin, my co-host, was with us in hour number one, talking a lot of football. And we're back tomorrow for a guest-heavy show. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football, and Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. That's tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.